Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Absentee ballot applications will be mailed to 2.7 million voters before the November presidential election. The state transportation secretary warns the potential shortfall in highway funds next year could be $400 million to $600 million. A backlog of 728,000 claims for unemployment benefits may not be cleared up until fall, and the Supreme Court leaves face masks and other courtroom safety procedures up to local judges. Rewind, your week in review for May 29th.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
First topic today, because it affects 2.7 million voters who are going to get something over snail mail, is a decision by the Wisconsin Election Commission to mail absentee voter applications, and that's an important word, to 2.7 million voters. The decision came at this week's meeting of the Wisconsin Election Commission, and they also, though, they have to agree on a letter that they will review the drafting of. Staff will present them a letter on the June 10th meeting that will explain the three different options. JR, no surprises in this vote to spend up to 2.25 million to mail absentee ballot apps to 2.7 voters?
The commissioners had expressed support for the concept of this in a meeting a week earlier. This was really kind of working out the details of how it would work, because remember, there was also on the table other proposals of how to do this, or how widespread that the app mailing should be. They narrowed it down to registered voters who haven't already requested an absentee ballot. And so there are a couple of limits. It's not the biggest universe as it could be with this.
Thank you.
Still, it's going to change if, this is a big if it has a huge impact in terms of people who request absentee ballots. It could really be a different kind of election this fall than what we're used to. Remember, usually via mail, we're less than 6%. So for a typical November election, you know, a presidential year, we were well above, you know, we were two-thirds, three-fourths of the election was done by mail in April.
Right.
So if we go to a more of a mail election, what's it going to look like? That also means for campaigns, they have to reconfigure how they do things. Because usually, you know, if you're a voter, you've probably received some kind of a third-party absentee ballot application before. Often, however, they have erroneous information. Every fall we see this, right, Steve?
Yeah.
So-and-so sent these people an application for absentee ballots, and they had the wrong clerk or the wrong this. So they've seen them before. What's going to be different now, though, is that it's the state that's doing it. And two, campaigns, you can pay for a subscription with the Elections Commission where you could track who's mailed in an absentee ballot, who's requested, who's mailed it in. Why that's important is as they target voters toward the end of the election, they will know who's already cast their ballot and take that voter off of the role of, okay, I've got to send mail to these people. Well, not that person anymore because he or she's already voted. Oh, by the way, though, we're talking about an election in which we're in a down economy. There are fewer resources probably at play in this election, right? You now have, as a candidate, a wider window to target voters because you can't miss out on people who are going to vote in September right now, right? Because they get an absentee ballot in that early. Well, how do you manage your campaign with that going on? It's just a whole new ballgame for campaigns and how to approach this fall.
Right.
I want to go a little deeper here on the back and forth on the commission, especially between Democratic Commissioner Mark Thompson and Republican Commissioner Robert Spindell on the letters and the decision they must make to review the letter at the June 10 meeting. And let's just hear a little bit, about a minute and a half of the commission. Thompson opens and then Spindell says, look, Republicans are better at in-person voting. Democrats are better at absentee, but let's hear it from them.
We adopted a report on absentee ballots that said, we believe in the vigorous exercise of our constitutional right to vote should be strongly encouraged. We have to get ahead of the absentee ballot requests by putting this out right now. We create the mechanism for voters to timely request absentee ballots and vote them so we don't have an avalanche the commission makes policy and their staff, we trust them to send out letters. The day the commission decides and say, look, we're going to sit on $2.2 million until June 10th, and then we're going to say, no, we don't like the letter and we're going to kill it. It's not going to happen, Bob. And if you're really going to vote against it because you want to micromanage every letter, then you are in the wrong job.
It seems to me that Commissioner Thompson and Ann are in the process of trying to push the Democratic agenda of an all-male in election, or a situation where they're trying to push you should and encourage people to vote absentee. We have three different ways in this state that you're allowed to vote. One is by mail absentee, another one is by in-person on election day, and the third one is in-person absentee voting. To make it perfectly clear, the Republicans are better voting on election day than are the Democrats, and the Democrats are better at using mail absentee votes than the Republicans are. I didn't see any problem whatsoever on this letter, just as long as those topics are covered appropriately.
I want to stay with the decisions made by the Elections Commission, JR. Just one more point. The commission did give local clerks $4.1 million in federal aid, COVID-19 aid, and they can handle that in a variety of ways. They can handle costs like printing and postage, cleaning and sanitation needs, adding staffers, and opening new polling places if they have to pay rents. So this is a big part of the $7.3 million in federal COVID aid?
Yeah, another thing to keep in mind is that this is all happening while President Trump is tweeting incessantly about how there's going to be massive fraud because of a mail-in election.
Right.
What's interesting is this is unanimous vote by the commission, which is 3-3, GOP versus Democratic appointees. He has to be backed doing this, and you noted like Spindell's comments about Republicans are better about doing it in person versus Democrats are better doing it via mail. In talking to Republican operatives, one point they made to me was, if you look around the state right now, Milwaukee's already talked about doing this. They were sure that Madison, Democratic mayors in Green Bay and Wausau and other places would follow suit, and there'd be a huge advantage for urban areas in terms of these absentee mail applications. So the Republicans are like, yeah, we know the president's not really a big fan, or at least he's kind of making this difficult case against absentee balloting, but we don't want to have Democrats have the leg up in this. So for the Republicans, they kind of went along with the idea because they want to have an even playing field, because Republicans continually complain that places like Madison and Milwaukee have early in-person voting that opens up, I think, like 40-some days out from the election. Now, Democrats say, hey, if you don't like it, get your local clerks in small-town Wisconsin, open up 40 days early. You can do it, too. But the courts have said repeatedly the Republican attempts to limit in-person early voting are unconstitutional. Therefore, in Madison and Milwaukee, you can go to the polls early, and if you add a mailer for absentee ballots on top of that, you know, it would be an to Republicans, it'd be an advantage for Democrats.
Right.
Keep in mind, of the $2.3 million being spent on this mailer, they said they get a return rate of about 1%, 27,000. But here's the caveat to that. The commission feels like staff does, you'll get a lot of people who register online the ballots. So yeah, we might not get a lot of stuff mailed back to us, but they're expecting a rush maybe through my vote to ask your absentee ballot that way.
Yeah. The mailings would trigger online questions asking for absentee ballots. Just a P.S. If approved, this letter and the apps would go out about September 1. Okay, second topic, JR, just real quickly. Monday is the 5 p.m. deadline for candidates to file nomination papers for both the August primary and November 3 general election. Because of COVID, it's moved from the relatively small headquarters one block from the Capitol to a Union South Varsity Hall. I think it was 10,000 square feet. And candidates are in the process, and you and I have witnessed it for decades. Every election cycle, candidates rush in. They want all the reporters to know how many nomination papers they filed. Deadline, 5 p.m. Monday. What are you going to be looking for after that deadline?
Whether as many candidates who register get on the ballot. I mean, this is a unique environment because typically you go door to door. You go to big festivals in your district. You can get your 200 signatures for the assembly in a good weekend of having like a couple of county festivals in a few doors.
Yeah.
But right now, you don't have that opportunity. So Ravi's being the incumbents, you've got the legislative campaign committees behind you. You have state parties behind you. You have the networks of friends willing to download forms and, you know, get neighbors that they're okay interacting with or family to sign them. If you are a challenger, you may not have that infrastructure behind you, and particularly a place like the Dave Craig Senate District over in the Big Bend area. You know, he announced 2 weeks ago, right? A week and a half ago, he's not seeking re-election.
Right, right.
Recently. That narrows the window that much more
right,
for
right.
those candidates to try and get those signatures.
Right, right. And one candidate who'd filed for the assembly and then thought about, oh, I may seek to run for Dave Craig Senate seat, was told, once you filed for the assembly, you cannot change it. I found that very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned that too.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, topic three. I did a Newsmakers interview with Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson, and I said, first of all, with fewer drivers in the wake of the lockdown, how are you doing? How's the budget, the highway fund budget for the year ending June 30? And he said, we anticipate a $30 million shortfall in gas tax, $50 million in titling, and the annual fee you and I pay. So, but we think we can cover that. But we're going to hear from Craig directly now in a minute. And if you listen closely, I said, projected shortfall, highway fund, transportation fund gap next year, beginning July 1. And he says, I was very surprised by the answer between 400 and 600 million. So let's hear from Secretary Thompson, please.
If we witnessed the reduction for an entire year of traffic, you know, it could be as much as $400 to $600 million. We don't anticipate that. I mean, we've already seen it tick back up beyond that. So I'm hesitant to throw too many specific numbers because we really don't know.
Potential fiscal 21 shortfall, 400 to 600 million. What are some options? And I realize you're not recommending them, but what are some options?
We could decide to delay lets, cancel lets. We could propose coming up with some of that revenue. We could propose filling in with some additional bonding to get us through that so that we don't have that disruption that would have an impact on the economy. But we believed that if you want to call it conservative, we're probably going to have to need to come up with at least $80 million to have revenues match expenditures by the end of the fiscal year, by June 30th. And so we tried to make sure that we found even more in that to make sure that we didn't cut it too close.
It's important to point out some of the facts that Secretary Thompson said in my Newsmakers interview. Number one, after the lockdown, after Safer at Home, passenger non-commercial VMT, miles traveled, dropped up to 48% on state highways, point one. As I said, they're pretty good shape for the budget year ending June 30. Point three, all 371 state projects scheduled to be done, lettings in spring will be done because those are funded in the current fiscal year. The expansion of I-94 in Racine County is ahead of schedule and will be completed soon. But then go back to the transportation potential. That's important. Potential transportation fund shortfall, fiscal 21, 400 to 600 million. When I looked up the Legislative Fiscal Bureau summary, they expected revenues in the transportation fund of 2.1 billion in fiscal 21. Obviously, a 400 million shortfall would be 20%. A 600 million shortfall would be 600%. When I asked Secretary Thompson potential options, if you have a shortfall that he started out saying would be hundreds of millions before I pushed him into the 400 million to 600 million, he said there's really only three. You can delay projects, you can raise revenues, or you can borrow more money. Okay, JR, I took the lead on this. What's your response to Secretary Thompson saying we may have a hundreds of million dollars shortfall in the transportation fund next fiscal year?
Well, it's no surprise. It's kind of what's happening across government's entire state. Now, one positive piece of transportation news, President Trump tweeted late Thursday that the rapid transit bus system in Milwaukee that would link downtown Milwaukee with the Medical Research Center out in the Tosa area, they're going to get $40.8 million in federal funding to help pave the way for that, about three-fourths the cost. So there was one bright spot. But, yeah, I mean, people are driving less. So of course, revenue is going to be down.
But aren't you surprised? 600 million, JR? Imagine what that would cause in the Capitol. A Capitol that couldn't agree on a gas tax increase last year in the budget, agreed to take the $75 you and I pay to renew our cars to $85 and double the titling fee. What type of paralysis might ensue if a shortfall, potential $600 million?
Oh, I mean, it's going to be, what are you going to cut? You know, and nobody's been furloughed yet at the agency. How's that going to work? Like, I get the impression that we're trying to get through this first fiscal year, and the state will deal with the problem in the second year after the election.
Right.
Anybody wants to come in October and vote on something painful, because it will be painful. And don't forget, too, the fiscal year runs July 1st to June 30th. So if you come in and cut in December or January, you're only going to get half of that fiscal year to take that whack out. Now, I'm sure the agencies are going to prepare for it and start looking for ways to save, hiring freezes, limits on travel, those kinds of things. It's not going to be enough to make up the shortfall we're talking about.
And just a P.S., in my interview, Secretary Thompson said, look, transportation fund separate from the general fund, and there have been no layoffs, no furloughs at the State Transportation Department. Compare that to the UW, which, when hit with a 5% cut in end-of-the-year spending, boy, they're paying, isn't it more than $60, $70 million? Anyway, okay, new topic. Dramatic public hearing in the Capitol this week on the backlog, the record number, 2.4 million in claims for unemployment insurance filed over a nine-week period. But DWD Secretary Caleb Frostman estimated the backlog, unprocessed claims, 728,000 that could last, not be paid until end of May, early October. Now, how is DWD dealing with this? I asked Frostman in my last interview, you started out with how many employees in this division, U of I, unemployment insurance? He said 500. What do you envision? He said we could take it to 1,700. And he explained, and his aide, who we'll hear from in a minute, explained that they're in the process of hiring, training, doing background checks. Very interesting. DWD got 88,000 first-time pandemic unemployment assistance claims from self-employed contractors and consultants. And then, JR, you and I heard the back-and-forth partisan bickering on this issue. How do you think DWD came out given this very emotional, dramatic hearing?
Well, here's the thing. When I've talked to people this week about this, nobody could have prepared for what happened, all right? We weren't expecting unemployment to zoom that much now. Granted, once you hit mid-March and saw what was going on, you could have done some things. But I'm talking about like January, February, we were at record lows, still record low unemployment.
3.1.
Up a little bit from our record low, but we're still in record territory. There wasn't really a burning need to overhaul the computer system over at DWD. There wasn't a need to bring more people on. We were actually shedding employees over there over the years because we just didn't have the claims. Now, fast forward to mid-March when the governor issues the first public health emergency, and then a week and a half later issues a stay-at-home order. That's what people have talked to you because, okay, maybe the Evers administration should have moved quicker to bring people in. Now, at this point, they moved their first employee, I think, like March 16th, transferred. Through transferring employees from other within DWD to the Unemployment Insurance Division, bring in from other agencies and hires, and then the three vendors they've now signed with, they're going to be up to 1,300 employees either taking claims or processing them by the end of June. But that's the end of June. The question is, why did they take these actions sooner? I think I first reported about three vendors 2 weeks ago today about they were bringing them on. Why weren't they done at the end of April, for example? Now, they're dealing with a pandemic. They're trying to get tracers in just to manage the chaos of this disease. That same time, it emphasizes for some insiders the perception of a bottleneck in the U.S. administration where things go through the East Wing before decisions are made. And when you have a bottleneck of information and decision-making, it slows down reactions for agencies to deal with situations like this.
Well, time to hear a very sharp exchange between the director of the DWD, a Division of Unemployment Insurance, and State Senator Steve Noss. Please.
The unemployment rate in Wisconsin when this started was at what, 3.1%, 3.4% is where it was. And then in just a matter of a few short weeks, we jumped up to 14%. That has never happened in history. No administration has ever faced anything like that before. We have done everything possible as quickly as possible to bring as many people on as we could. But as we've said, there's an aspect here. You've got to go through a hiring process. You have to do security on people. You have to make sure they have the equipment. We have done, I think, under the circumstances, I think we have done a good job. It's not good enough for a lot of the people who aren't getting benefits, and I feel bad for every one of those people. And it's going to get better. We are going to stand this system up, and we are going to take care of people.
I understand where the unemployment was. I get it. We all knew that. But when the governor's going to shut everything down on March 12th with an emergency order, didn't anybody think, what if we jump to 10%? Everybody's going to be shut down. People are going to be laid off. Nobody said we're just going to go merrily along. What if? It's the what if question. What if we go to 10%? What are we going to do? Can the programs handle it? Do we have enough staff? Do we need to hire more? Do we have to get another agency? Do we have to pull people from other departments? Nobody thought we might go to 10% when we shut the state down? Unbelievable.
Continuing to spend $1.9 billion in federal COVID 19 relief aid from Washington, Governor Evers announced a $200 million program called Routes to Recovery that would give that amount to local governments. Let's talk about that a little bit. The governor said every local government should share in federal COVID 19 recovery funds. 16 counties will get more than $16 million each. Milwaukee County, that will range from Milwaukee County's $15.3 million to $1.1 million for Sauk County. The money will go for emergency operations, PPE, temporary housing for infected or at risk, cleaning, testing, and contact tracing, family medical leave and sick leave, and it would also go to the largest cities. That would range from Milwaukee's $9.6 million to $1 million for Oshkosh, $10 million to the tribal funds. Any surprises there, JR?
No, one interesting note. Remember, they first got the CARES Act kind of umbrella look from Fiscal Bureau. The city of Milwaukee, Milwaukee County, and Dane County were all going to get money. Milwaukee County, though, is complaining because it was supposed to get like $163 million directly from the feds. It got 63. According to what I'm hearing, that there was amendment to the bill from what they thought it was going to be like, and it sent it an extra $100 million to the state instead. A little bit of a rub there between the Evers administration and the new administration of David Crowley about, hey, they feel like they should have gotten that extra money because of it. You should send it to us and all that kind of good stuff. But still, it's all about, I mean, now with the CARES Act, it's all about who's getting the money and how's it being used. I mean, farmers got $50 million, $75 million for small businesses, $200 million for local governments. You know, there's complaints that nursing homes aren't getting enough. I mean, everybody's saying, more. We need more, right? Because there's such an impact in the economy right now. You can't make everybody happy, but this is some way to kind of make some difference for some folks.
Okay. Just one final point, JR. You and I do the math on the $1.9 billion. When the governor spends an additional $200 million, what's he got left? About $300 million, do you think?
About
300 then. Okay. This week, in fact, on Tuesday, Governor Tony Evers' moratorium on evictions and foreclosures expired. Those who represent homeless groups say the COVID-19 job losses threaten more and more the ability of those most at the margins financially and economically to make rent and mortgage payments. And just a PS, the Assembly passed package to help the homeless still pending in the Senate. Yeah, the Senate could come back and take it, and some of the other 160 bills and resolutions that the Assembly had passed, but we have no idea when that's going to happen. And just a footnote, in the wake of Tuesday's lapse on the moratorium, the Coalition Against Homelessness offered three points, a proposal. DHS asked a federal government to make all homeless eligible for Medicaid. WEDA, Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority, provide new help for homeless and renters with mental illness. Evers orders DWD to create new jobs program for homeless. Don't see this getting any traction in the Capitol, JR, do you?
No, the state Senate, we've asked Julia Scottfield's office several times. The answer has been that they have not ruled out coming back this year to take up legislation, but they're not actively planning to do it. So I don't expect to see the Senate on the floor anytime soon. What's going on?
Got it. Okay. Also, in March, the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Patience Rogenczak, formed a COVID-19 task force after halting in-person jury trials, in-person proceedings. She gathered a lot of those who actively participate in the criminal justice process, awkwardness here, and formed a task force. That task force made recommendations, but last Friday, after we taped this show, the Supreme Court issued an order, and let's summarize what it said. In-person proceedings can resume if each county has approved plans to protect those in the courtrooms. Each county's plan must include face masks unless a judge waives a requirement for a witness so the jury could judge the potential credibility of the witness's reaction. That could be waived. And widespread safety protocols and hand sanitizer. The chief judge in each judicial administrative district must approve a plan before it can go into effect. And two of the seven, Justices Dan Kelly and Rebecca Grassl Bradley, dissented. Just a programming note, next Tuesday I'm going to do a Newsmakers with Director of State Courts Randy Koshnick, retired Milwaukee County Judge John D'Amato, and Bayfield County Circuit Court Judge John Anderson on these recommendations. Any PSs on the court's order, JR?
Just a quick one that Rebecca Bradley, again, dissented, and Daniel Kelly, saying that, look, these guys have had 2 months to figure things out. They should have left to do it on their own without the court stepping in like this. Also had a concurring opinion from Ziegler and Hagedorn, also conservatives, saying, hey, we agree with the order, but they would give more flexibility to locals to decide what's appropriate for them.
That's a very good point, JR. Okay, time for your stock picks, my friend.
Real quick, Rising, the National Guard. The Trump administration got some blowback because it's what's called a hard stop to guard assignments with COVID-19. The left guard members 1 day short of the needed time to qualify for federal education and pension benefits. The president tweeted out this week he's extending the order till August. Now, it was a presidential tweet. We don't have a actual black and white policy in front of us. But for Wisconsin Guard members, they were going to qualify for the 90 days sometime in, like, I think June or July. So now going to August, if you are looking for that qualification, you're going to get it now, assuming the president's tweet is actual policy.
And mixed.
DPI race. So state superintendent, we have two announced candidates so far. We have a third one looking at it. We don't have a conservative race so far. Why is that important? Well, right now, Sheila Briggs, who's worked for DPI, is running. Superintendent from rural Wisconsin is running. Troy Gunderson from West Salem is looking at it. There is not somebody in a DPI race. The conservative candidate is basically the pro-school choice candidate. We don't have one right now. It's been difficult for conservatives to find candidates in this race for the last few cycles because they haven't done very well. It's tough to raise money. You have the Republican legislature to kind of hold back any policies you don't like. So we might get a conservative candidate at some point. But right now, it's not obvious there's one out there wants to run for this office.
Okay, and just an important P.S. on that. The election for state superintendent of public instruction is not November 3rd. It will be not until April of 2021. Falling, JR.
Just real quick, state fair, first time in 75 years, not going to go on. So no cream puffs this year, people.
As I came to work today, I heard the Mr. Bailing, the head of the state fair board, say they're looking at drive up cream puffs, JR. That's pretty interesting. JR, just if we started a pool, when the state capitol, that beautiful building, might reopen, do you have any tentative dates in mind?
Oh, no.
No?
Not going to wager a bet right now, no.
You're not? Okay. I've asked DOA in an email, what are the protocols and the criteria to reopen the capitol? Haven't gotten any answer. Okay. Just before we came on the air, both the governor and Attorney General Call issued statements on the tragic death of Mr. Floyd in Minneapolis, which you've been watching the news, prompted protests, rioting, and the demolition of a police precinct in Minneapolis. Just short excerpt from the statement from Governor Evers. There was no empathy or humanity in Mr. Floyd's death. This was not an anomaly. Governor Evers says we must confront our comfortability with racism. We must reestablish trust with communities of color. We must be willing to listen. We must be willing to be uncomfortable. We must be willing to do the work. An excerpt from the statement from Attorney General Josh Call. The death was, quote, torture and murder under color of law. Justice demands that those involved in this depraved crime be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. On that note, I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's a Rewind for May 29.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.